So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, called The Activities of Priyavrata Maharaj, text number 23. This is an extremely long piece of prose, like we've been having for several days now, which is extremely difficult to fit onto the board, because it's 4 lines long, and also difficult to repeat responsively. And so I'm just going to read the text, and then we'll move on to the translation.
इति हवाव स जगति पतिर ईश्वरेच्छया धिनिवेशितकर्माधिकारो अखिल जगत बंध ध्वंसन परानुभावस्य भगवत आदि पुरुषस्यांग्रि युगलानवरत ध्यानानुभावेन परिरंधित कषायाशयो वदातो पिमान वर्धनो महतां महीतलम अनुशशास.
Which means, following the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Maharaj Priyavrata fully engaged in worldly affairs, yet he always thought of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are the cause of liberation from all material attachment. Although Priyavrata Maharaj was completely freed from all material contamination, he ruled the material world just to honor the orders of his superiors. This we can repeat. Following the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Maharaj Priyavrata, fully engaged in worldly affairs, yet he always thought of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are the cause of liberation from all material attachments. Although Priyavrata Maharaj was completely freed from all material contamination, he ruled the material world just to honor the orders of his superiors.
Purpur, by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki jai.
The word mana vardhano mahatam, just to show honor to superiors, are very significant. Although Maharaj Priyavrata was already a liberated person and had no attraction for material things, he engaged himself fully in governmental affairs just to show respect to Lord Brahma. Arjuna had also acted in the same way. Arjuna had no desire to participate in political affairs or the fighting at Kurukshetra, but when ordered to do so by the Supreme Lord Krishna, he executed those duties very nicely. One who always thinks of the lotus feet of the Lord is certainly above all the contamination of the material world. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shaddhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamo mata. Of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. Maharaj Priyavrata, therefore, was a liberated person and was among the highest of yogis. Yet, superficially, he became the emperor of the universe in accordance with the order of Lord Brahma. Showing respect to his superior in this way was another one of his extraordinary qualifications. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Narayana para sarve na kutaschana bibhyati svargapavarka narkesu api tulyartha darshinam. A devotee who is actually advanced is not afraid of anything, provided he has the opportunity to execute the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the proper explanation of why Priyavrata engaged in worldly affairs, although he was a liberated person. Also, only because of this principle does a Mahabhagavata, who has nothing to do with the material world, come down to the second platform of devotional service to preach the glories of the Lord all over the world.
Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
So, Prabhupada's focusing on, in this verse, on just a few words in the text, namely Mana Vardhano Mahatam. And the whole purport is on these three words. Namely, just to show honor to superiors. Here, there's a bit of surprise, a bit of amazement being expressed with the words iti ha vava,
bhava. This is in several verses actually, meaning, oh my, oh dear, right? How surprising that Maharaj Priyavrata sort of changed the course of his life just because of the order of his grandfather, Brahma. And it's actually quite a surprising thing, if you think about it. He was all set on pursuing a specific course, a specific direction in life, that of Brahmacharya. And he received an order from a superior, and poof, the whole direction kind of changed. And so Prabhupada, throughout the purport, he's emphasizing the importance of accepting and showing respect to and following the orders that come from superiors. Now, the idea of following an order has something of a bit of a negative ring for most of us, because following orders can seem very autocratic and very painful, and something you do because you don't want to, but because you have to. And so following orders can be, you know, generally speaking, today no one likes to give orders even. Right? What to speak of wanting to follow orders. Both of them are kind of painful processes, to give orders and to receive orders. Those who are superiors often feel that, you know, who am I to give an order or to tell someone what to do, especially if it has the potential of changing their direction in life. What if I get it wrong? And then, you know, he's meant to be a grihastha and I tell him to be a brahmachari. He's meant to be a brahmachari, I tell him to be a grihastha, or something of that nature. And of course, the person receiving the order also feels that, oh, but what about my, you know, independence, my sense of individuality, etc. So it's an interesting idea here, Prabhupada's talking about at length, is following orders, and quite amazing to see the extent to which Maharaj Priyavrata was ready to do it. Now, let's look at it first from the perspective of the person receiving the order. Okay. Suppose we receive an order from someone who's clearly our superior or someone to be respected or worthy of respect. Then how might we respond to such an order? And there's a number of different ways in which something like that could happen. First of all, we might say, yes, sir, and just do it, right? Do the order. And we have many fine examples of that in the Shastras. One is given right here, Maharaj Priyavrata saying, yes, sir, right? We had that earlier. What was the word? Badham iti, Prabhupada translates. Badham means it's bound, I'm tied, I'll do it. I will execute this. Also, we heard in earlier classes of Lord Ramachandra, a very famous example of someone who said, it's an order, I'll do the order, even if it means spending 14 years in exile in the forest on starting with the eve of my coronation, very significant occasion. In the prime of his youth, just ready to take up kingship, and he heads off to the forest, and 14 years he spends there. Along with that, another brother was following an order, namely Maharaj Bharata. Right? Bharat Maharaj was absolutely not interested in ruling the kingdom. In fact, he was very, very unwilling to do it, even though that was the second order that his father had given. Right? The first one was that Rama should be exiled, and the second one was that Bharata should be king. He was very unwilling, but again, the order of his father, and especially the desire or order of his brother, Ramachandra, he said, you stay here for 14 years. After that, I'm coming back. But until then, you have to rule. Right? And Maharaj Bharata said, okay, I'll do it. I'll rule on your behalf. Your slippers will be on the throne. Your shoes, I will rule as your minister. And if you should be so much as one day late, you will find me dead upon your return. Right? That was his. So he said, I'll follow your order, but you better stick to your side of the contract, right? 14 years, you're coming back. This is why Lord Ramachandra was in a big rush when he returned from Sri Lanka. Right? He had killed Ravana. It took a little more time than he thought. But fortunately, on the way back, he didn't have to walk because he had the Pushpaka Viman, this airplane, special airplane, which flew with the desire of the mind, and he was able to, that Ravana had stolen from Kuvera, and he was able to fly on that back. So famous examples of following orders. Also, we have our own Srila Prabhupada and his exclusive devotion or determination to follow the order of his spiritual master. He so often said that the only credit I can take is that I tried to sincerely follow the order of my spiritual master. Whenever people would try to give him credit, he said, that's it. Right? That's the only credit I can receive. You also find the orders given to Hanumanji and go find Mother Sita, and what he was willing to do in order to find her and then to help recover her, whether it be jumping across the ocean or when Rama and Lakshmana fell unconscious and they needed a special herb from the Himalayas to be revived. They were in Lanka at this time, so opposite ends of the subcontinent. And Hanuman says, no problem, and he jumps across and finds the mountain, but not the herb. And so he says, well, got to pick up the mountain, and jumps back. Right? So following orders perfectly, also Hanuman. So many examples like that, right? Of people who just said, yes, sir, and I'm going to go ahead and do it, whatever is being said. That's, of course, in some ways, the ideal response. You have someone who's the ideal order giver, and you have someone who's the ideal order follower, and things work very, very well. Amazing things can be accomplished in that situation. In fact, following an order is not even just a mechanical process where I was told to do X, so I'll do X. Again, sometimes we think that order following is this sort of mindless activity where, you know, do pick up this, and so I pick up this, sit here, and I sit here, kind of in the manner that a trained dog would follow orders, sit, eat, beg, right, fetch. And to some extent, yes, maybe. But order following is actually much more of an involved and actually challenging process that requires a lot of intelligence in order to perform. Let me give you an example. Srila Prabhupada, he was ordered by his spiritual master to preach in English. And he took that order to write books in English. This was the order from his spiritual master. So he could have written books in English sitting in India. He could have written books coming to New York and said, well, the order was to write books, not to open temples. So temples is for someone else. Or he said English, therefore no French or Dutch or Spanish, right? Because the order was English. No, Prabhupada took the order, he understood the spirit of the order, and he expanded the order to an extent no one thought even possible or imaginable. It just multiplied and multiplied and multiplied, increased it to no extent. Also, there's a nice incident in the Mahabharata where Ashwatthama once comes to Dronacharya, and he complains to his father. Drona is his father, and he says, you know, I'm your son, and I'm also your student, but you always say that Arjuna is the best archer in the world, and you promise that you will make him the best archer in the world. Why? I feel he felt a bit bad about that. So Dronacharya, he explained, he said, you see, you're dearer to me than my very own life because you're my son. And he showed this later on in his life where he practically died because of his affection for his son. He said, you're so dear to me, but as a student, I have to admit, right, that there's a big difference between you and Arjuna. What's the difference? Arjuna, both of you receive the same instructions. Arjuna creates a foundation, uses those instructions as a foundation, and builds a whole palace on it. You receive the instruction, and you stay happy with it. You stay just within the bounds of that instruction. Stay contained. And a nice example of this is learning to shoot arrows. Dronacharya taught them how to shoot arrows in the daytime, in light, where you can see your target. But Arjuna was more interested in learning further, right? Learning how to shoot at night as well. And so one time he was sitting down with Bhima, and Bhima was eating. This is in the middle of the night. You're not supposed to eat in the dark, right, where you can't see your food. It's considered to be improper. So because you can't tell what's going in your mouth. So Arjuna, he was really amazed. He said, how is it possible? He was sitting there kind of analyzing Bhima. And he said, the food's there, your mouth is here. How does your hand know in the pitch dark where to go? Like, what? How come it always aims in the right place and it always goes to your mouth? You don't accidentally go here or here. It's, you can't see anything. It's in the middle of the night. And Bhima said, actually, even the hands have eyes, right? Even hands have eyes. They can see. And Arjuna thought, hands have eyes. Wow. Okay. So if he can aim the hand to the mouth, maybe I can aim using the arrow as well, right? If my eyes can't see, maybe my hands can. And so then he started practicing shooting arrows in the dark and learned that all on his own. The next day, his teacher was completely amazed, right? Wow, amazing. So, as he said, this is an example. Arjuna takes my order, takes my instruction, and builds an entire edifice on it, a palace. He expands it and expands it. He understands the spirit of it and he takes it to its furthest extent. And you, Ashwatthama, receive the order and you stay satisfied. Do this, okay, I do this. And then what? Tell me next. Do this, then I do that. That kind of thing. So following orders can actually be quite a creative process, even though it doesn't sound like that at first. Quite a challenging, quite an ambitious process. And a difficult one also to understand, well, what is the meaning or the purpose of the order? What is the intent there? So that's one possibility, okay? You receive an order, you follow it. But then that's always not possible, or not always, doesn't feel like sometimes the right thing to do. Suppose you receive an order and you're not sure, or you disagree, or you don't think it's right, or you're nervous, not sure whether you can do it. Then what to do, right, in circumstances like that? We also have fine examples of that kind of situation. And the best example is one that Prabhupada gives here, namely Arjun. Arjun in Bhagavad Gita. Right at the beginning of chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, tells him, he says, kutastva kashmalam idam vishame samupastitam anarijushtam asvargyam akirti karam Arjuna. He says, my dear Arjun, where has this infamy, this weakness of heart come upon you? Klaibhyam masmagamapartha. He says, give it up. Give up this hridaya dorbalyam, this weakness of heart. This is not how a warrior, how a soldier reacts. This will bring you infamy, not fame. It won't be the path to heaven. You'll go to hell. So therefore he says, tyakto tishtha. He says, give it up and rise and fight, O Arjun. Parantapa, O burner of your foe. He says, rise and fight. So there's a direct order from Krishna at the beginning of chapter 2. At that point, Bhagavad Gita could be over. Right? Arjun could say, God said, Krishna said, let's get up, let's fight. Okay, over. Right? And that would be the end of Bhagavad Gita. One chapter of Arjuna's lamentation, two words from Krishna, give it up, stand up and fight. Arjun says, thank you, and we go on. But that, we know that doesn't happen. After Krishna gives his first order to Arjun, Arjun comes back and he says, no, I still can't do it. He says, Guru Nahatvahi Mahanubhavan. My dear Lord, how can I go into battle and kill my gurus? I understand you're a spiritual master. You're telling me to do this. You're my superior. But what about all these others? Mahanubhavan, they're great souls. I can't kill them. And then he turns back to Krishna and says, Dharma Samudha Cheta. My dear Lord, Karpanya dosho pahata swabhava prichami tvam dharma samudra cheta. I'm becoming really, really weak at heart. I don't know what to do. Please tell me what is best to me. Shishyasteham sadhimam tvam prapannam. I've surrendered to you. Tell me what I need to do. And, you know, the fact of the matter is Krishna already told him what to do. He already said that just three verses ago. But the fact of the matter, the reason Arjuna is repeating it is because he can't get himself to follow the order. He doesn't think it's right. So then Krishna tries further. And in every chapter of Bhagavad Gita, no matter what Krishna is talking about, nearly every chapter, Krishna always repeats one thing. He says, "Yudhya cha." So get up and fight. Always says this, get up and fight. Practically every chapter, Arjuna receives the same order. But for 18 chapters, Arjuna is not ready to do it. He can't follow the order yet. Sometimes he's confused. He says, "Your instructions are equivocal. I don't understand them. First you say that intelligence is better. Then you say that action is better. If you think intelligence is better, why do you want me to act in this horrible war?" Right? And several times he asks the same question to Krishna. He repeats it in slightly different language, but it's basically the same question. Krishna repeats himself and explains it again, repeats himself. Chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna finally says something really significant. After Krishna describes the four essential verses of Gita, Arjuna turns around and he says, "Sarvame tadritam manye yanmam vadasi Keshava." My dear Keshava, I accept as truth everything you have told me. Sarvam eta dritam manye. It's truth. And so you think the Bhagavad Gita should be over. Right? Krishna said, go fight. Arjuna said, I accept as truth. It's right. Everything you've said. But he still can't get himself to say, I'm ready to act according to your instructions. Right? I know it's right, but I can't do it yet. I still can't get myself to do it. Please say a bit more. Right? Tell me more about you. So Krishna then tries scaring him with the universal form. You sure you want to see this? Yeah, I want to see it. You sure? Okay, here we go. And I just said, no, never mind. Okay, that's enough. So it goes on. Finally, chapter 18, Arjun says, Nashta moha smite labdha karishye vachanam tava. Nashta moha, my illusion is destroyed. Smite labdha, my intelligence is back. And then the most important words, karishye vachanam tava. Just three words that seal it completely. Karishye vachanam tava. I will act according to your instructions. Karishye, I will do vachanam, your words. Your words, tava means your, right? I will act according to your words. Then it's truly over, and then it's done. Arjun picks up his bow and he's ready to fight again. So it's possible we receive an order that we're not convinced about, an order that we don't feel is right. It's okay. We can go back to the person who's given the order and say, please explain, here's my doubt. I think if I do this, these will be the problems associated with it, like Arjun did. If I kill all these people, all the men will die. The ladies will have no husbands. Then we'll have unwanted progeny. So he's giving his arguments, right? Very learned arguments, in fact, Krishna acknowledges. He says, Prajna Vadang, she's speaking very learned words. We can go back and we can explain our situation, our issue, our problem. Or I feel too nervous, or I don't think I can do this. And hopefully the order will be explained, it'll be encouraged, perhaps then we'll feel better about doing it. It can take a little bit of time. That's okay, right? Executing the order is okay, going back and asking further about the order is okay. What's not okay is completely ignoring the order, right? Even in some circumstances, rejecting the order is okay, right? That's also an option in a few circumstances. And the most famous example of that? Bali Maharaj, right? With Shukracharya, where he received an order, namely, don't give what this boy is asking in charity, what Vamanadeva is asking in charity, because he's actually Vishnu who's going to cheat you, take away everything. Shukracharya actually predicted the whole story, all to the end. And he said, don't do it, I know what's going to happen. And Bali Maharaj rejected that order. He said, no. See, the rejection of order is possible in certain limited circumstances, right? When an order conflicts with a higher order, especially with a duty towards God, then when an order is taking us away from Krishna, then yes, it's possible to reject that order. The important thing to keep in mind, though, when we're rejecting an order, is that when we reject the order, we reject the authority, that person. In other words, Prabhupada explains in that incident with Bali Maharaj that Bali Maharaj made a decision to reject his spiritual master. He rejected his spiritual master. It's not, in other words, the point is that it's not possible that you can say, I won't do what you're saying, but you're still my guru. Right. That there's no place there. You, by rejecting the order, you reject the person, right? You reject the authority, the position of that person. Okay, you're still my friend, maybe, but in terms of my role as spiritual master, that's rejected. He said, he's rejected. You're not my spiritual master anymore. Such an unqualified spiritual master, Prabhupada says, can be rejected. So, acceptance of the order, further clarification of questioning of the order, even rejection of the order at times, okay, is appropriate. What's not appropriate is ignoring the order. Right? Is saying, whatever, doesn't matter. Right? That type of response that's truly unfortunate. Right? That's uncultured. That's improper. And that's even offensive. Right? Because when the order comes from someone who's the right person to be giving the order, and we'll talk about that a little bit in a minute, then the order cannot be neglected. It can be accepted, it can be clarified, it can even be rejected, but not neglected. Because neglect means callousness. It means, I don't care. It means this person is not worthy of listening. And that is an offensive mentality. Right? That doesn't matter, whatever. That mentality is very detrimental towards spiritual life. Very detrimental. So, okay, following an order. But then there's the other side of things also, giving an order. Because there's no orders to follow unless there's people willing to give the order and people qualified to give the order. The most important orders, of course, come from the Supreme Lord himself, Krishna. He's giving plenty of orders in Bhagavad Gita. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vacha. But those orders, as we understand, are received through the process of parampara. They come through the spiritual master. And so the order of the spiritual master then becomes as good as the order of Krishna. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado. Yasya prasadat. Becomes as good as Krishna's order. Then there are other gurus as well, other superiors that we have. One's parents, one's grandparents, those who are senior devotees, senior godbrothers, all kinds of different persons who are qualified in various ways, even older brothers or older sisters, right, who are qualified in some way to give orders or to give direction or to give instruction. But they have to be willing as well to give that. And that's often a big challenge for us in today's world. Because order giving can be a very nerve-wracking thing for the person who's giving the order. Sometimes we think, to give orders is so easy, right? You give the orders, I'm the most junior devotee around, so I just have to run around following what everyone says. Actually, order giving is not at all an easy task. Yes, abusing someone is easy, right? Imposing your will on someone is easy. But properly giving agnya or order, anushasana, the word we've received before, instruction or order in the form of instruction, it's actually something that's quite challenging. Why? Because it requires a lot of responsibility on the person giving the order. You give an order to someone to act in a certain way. You're responsible. You're responsible for their life, for their future, what happens to them.
Is this the right order? This order has the potential to change someone's life. Am I sure? Right? To give proper orders is an immense service and a very difficult one. Right? That's why the role of the spiritual master is actually very, very difficult. If we speak to any spiritual master who does that service, right, they'll explain it's actually such a painful service, such a difficult service. Right? Because someone looks up to you for the direction of their life. And what if you don't know? Right? Or you're not sure? Right? And having the ability to go down deep enough, pray to Krishna, look for inspiration from the Super Soul and say, please, I hope I'm doing the right thing here. Right? And then to turn around and give that instruction with confidence, right? To instill confidence in the person who's junior. Because you also, you know, when you give an instruction, you give an order, you have to give that, with that, the confidence to execute it. You can't say, well, you know, well, you can give advice like that, but you have to give some inspiration along with it too. Otherwise, you know, what is that person going to do with that order? It's just like Prabhupada sending devotees to different parts of the world. Krishna Kshetra was describing, he told Tamakrishna Maharaj, right, go to China. Right? He gave him the confidence, yes, you can do it. Right? Or start a magazine, he told Satsurup Maharaj. I don't know how to run a magazine. But start it, you can do it. Oh, okay, I can do it. Yeah, Krishna will help you. Krishna will help you. Right? That ability, so it's a difficult task giving an order. Right? Developing the confidence, the inner strength yourself to say, okay, I think this is the right person. This is the right task. Let me turn around and then give this person the inspiration. Give him some of my own confidence. Right? Empowerment, basically, is the word in English. Empowerment. Say, yes, Krishna will help you. Yes, you can do this. Yes, I know you're capable. There's a beautiful story in the Ramayana when all the monkeys are on the bank of the southern shore of the ocean. The group that went to the south, headed by Sugriva and Nala and Nila and Jambavant and Hanuman, and they know where Mother Sita is. They discovered she's on the other side of the ocean to Lanka. And so they're all trying to figure out, well, how do we get across? Because we need to find her. We need to verify and get to her the message of Lord Ramachandra. You know, so they're monkeys. So they think in ways that they do best, which is how to jump. And they're each thinking, well, how can we jump best? One person tries and another person tries. I can go this far. I can go that far. Someone says, I can go halfway there. One person says, I've got the strength to get all the way there, but I can't get back. Well, that won't work. So many different options, and no one knows what to do because everyone's confused. And then finally, Jambavant, he speaks up. Now, Jambavant says, you know, in my youth, when I was young, I could have jumped across this whole universe 7 times and still had strength left over after that. But I'm old now, I can't do that anymore. You know, he was quite old. Jambavant was the son of Lord Brahma, born at the beginning of creation. So by Ramachandra's time, he's already a ripe old age of 2 million years or so. Okay. He was still around at the time of Krishna, another million years later, million and a half. You can imagine, still at Krishna's time, he was strong enough to fight for days on end and no one was losing. So, quite a powerful personality. But he said, I can't do this anymore. But I know who can. And he goes to Hanumanji, who's sitting in a corner sulking, because he really wants to serve the Lord, but he doesn't know how. And he says, Hanuman, you can do it. And Hanuman says, me? I can't do it. If you can't do it, Nal and Neem and Sugriva, these are my superiors, they're more powerful than I am. I can't do this. I'm just a kid in front of them. He was so much younger. He says, no, you can. You can do this. And he starts reminding him of all his exploits in the past. Right? Remember the time when you jumped for the sun and you ate it thinking it was an orange?
Remember the time Indra hit you on the chin with his thunderbolt and it hardly hurt you? Little bit it did. And this is why he's called Hanuman, because the word Hanu means chin. Someone whose chin was broken is Hanuman. Or hit, rather. You can do this. And he starts reminding him. And Hanuman feels empowered. Yes, I can do this. For my Lord, I can do this. And so he climbs up on the tip of the highest mountain on that coast. And with a loud Jai Shri Ram, he jumps off, he launches himself. And he says the pressure, the push, the Ramayana describes of his launch is so great that the entire mountain seems to shake, almost shatter from the push. And the force is so strong that the wind that's created from it, it sweeps all the flowers from the trees on that mountain. Right? They get swept up in the wind as he's jumping, and they follow him so that he looks like a comet streaking across the sky. Right? Beautiful image. Huh? Beautiful image. So in that case, you see, Jambavant functioned as the ideal order giver. In fact, he was the ideal leader. Hanumanji, of course, was a leader. But Jambavant was a leader as well. The ideal leader. Because he was able to see the potential in another living being and inspire them to reach that potential in the service of a particular goal. And that's what a leader is. Someone who's able to look at someone, say, they have this potential, and inspire them to reach that potential in the service of a greater goal. So even though if I were to ask you, well, what did Jambavant do in the Ramayana? Most of us can't come up with a big list, right? He didn't jump across the ocean, didn't lift any mountains, he didn't kill any major fighters, but he was a leader. Often the greatest leaders in this world, not often, usually, the greatest leaders in this world stay behind the scenes. Right? One doesn't realize what an impact they have in people's lives unless you look carefully. So that's someone who gives an order. And Hanumanji, of course, the ideal order carrier. Orders can come in many, many different forms. They can come, of course, in the direct command. Do it. Like that. And certain individuals give orders like that. Krishna gives orders like that. Mam ekam sharanam vraja. That's a command. It's in the imperative. Vraja, do it. The spiritual master may give orders like that. We may receive orders in other ways. Please do this. May you do this. Or sometimes even they come in the form of blessings or prayers. I hope that one day you can please Krishna and your spiritual master. Right? Or I pray that one day you can serve the Lord in a wonderful way. Coming from a superior, that's an order. Right? Sometimes it can come even in the form of praise. Right? You are such a wonderful and humble devotee. Right? Coming from a superior, we can take that as an order. Okay, I'm not humble, but I should become humble. Right? And I have the blessings, I have the support of this devotee who's given me, who's praised me in this way. So often looking for orders, right? Even if we don't have, we like, well, what direct order did my guru give me? Well, it may not be in the form of do this, right? Maybe in the form of please do this, or may you do this, or can you do this, or I hope you can do this one day. Or you're already doing this wonderfully. Like that. And once we have an order like that, and this is the last point Prabhupada's making in this purport, that wonderful point. Once we've received an order from an appropriate source, receiving an order actually bestows fearlessness on the person who's receiving the order. Because finally, you feel, okay, I just need to do it. Right? Whatever circumstance I'm in, if I can just follow the order, things will be okay. It's a big relief. For a soldier fighting in a battlefield, to receive an order is a big relief. Otherwise, how do you manage a situation where you're constantly under fire of death? I've got an order. I got to do it. Even if it means death, I got to do it. Such a relief in a situation which would otherwise be so difficult, so full of anxiety. Prabhupada is saying here, he says, a devotee is who is actually advanced is not afraid of anything provided he has the opportunity to execute the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you have an order with you, then you've got a greatest weapon in hand. Right? I've got an order. I know what to do. And look at Prabhupada. I have an order. Fine. I'll go to America at the age of 70. I'll face every health problem imaginable. Right? I'll deal with every difficult situation imaginable. I'll deal with getting robbed. I'll deal with an attempt stab. I'll deal with a couple heart attacks. I'll deal with struggles from my disciples. Why? Because I have an order. So Krishna will protect me. I'm working on orders. It bestows a lot of fearlessness on the devotee to carry out such an order. And it's actually a very, very deep and wonderful experience. And this is the final point that we have to remember so well. It's actually a wonderful, it can be a very profound and very loving experience. We may think that following an order is so unemotional, right? So heartless, right? Just do it. But actually, when we know how, what an order is and how to follow it, it can be a very, very profound, very deep experience. Just like Prahladananda Maharaj was saying the other day, right? That we don't realize just how profound Dasya Rasa is. Right? Just how profound it is. I mean, you imagine the emotions that Hanumanji goes through, right? In his mood towards Lord Ramachandra. He is so fully, completely satisfied in his service that even if you offered to him a position of friendship with Lord Ram, he would think it horrible. Unimaginable. Right? I can't do that. He's so genuinely happy. If you look at some of the greatest devotees in the history of Vaishnavism, they served the Lord by following his order. And they were so blissful, so joyful, and held such a close and deep and personal relationship. Right? Prabhupada said, I feel my spiritual master is always next to me. He's always with me. So it can actually be a very wonderful experience. A fearless experience and a very wonderful, loving experience in terms of receiving and following an order. So I'll stop there. It covers most of the points in this purport here. Are there any questions or comments? Mother Jayapada. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nitya Das, that mood of being Das, our servant, has to be there. Otherwise, we're not situated in our Swarupa. There's no doubt. I remember I was once with Loknath Maharaj, and I was just in the room, we were doing a couple things, and at some point a disciple happened to come in. And I didn't know the background of that disciple or what the ongoing topic was, but I just remember him telling him. He was a little, you know, upset with him. And he said, do you know that there is no one in the spiritual world, no one who works without direction? He said, absolutely no one. He said, the most advanced devotees work under direction of someone else. Right? So he said, you want to be like the gopis? You work under direction. Right? So it was, you know, it seemed like a heavy point in the moment. And like I said, I didn't know what was exactly the background of that situation. I just came into it. But just on its own, it's a wonderful point, isn't it? That, you know, we know that the gopis are not doing anything grudgingly. We know that it's not a mechanical process. We know that it's not a, you know, like a painful process for them. And yet, they're working under direction. Right? The most spontaneous devotees in this universe, right? The most spontaneous devotees in the world work under direction. So that's another thing, right? Spontaneity and direction. They're not opposites. They're not opposites. In fact, they actually, to be truly spontaneous, it has to be within certain directions. Otherwise, there cannot be spontaneity. There's only chaos. There's only chaos. Like, I'll give you an example. You look at the best pianists, right, or musicians. They can sit down on the piano, and they just play, you know? It just, or they see a piece of music, they can sight read. The most beautiful, difficult music in the world, and da-da-da, it just flows out of their fingers. Amazing. And you think, ah, that's the way to play the piano, right? I'm not gonna, all these notes and scales, A, B, C, D, I'm not. And you sit down on the piano, you go, okay, I'm gonna play, da-da-da-da, and you try, and what comes out, right? It's not beautiful music, it's just noise. Right? It's just noise. Why? Because that spontaneity that's exhibited on the piano is possible in the context of direction. Right? You stay within certain keys, you adjust tempo and loudness to a certain extent, you move in a certain direction, you all those directions, that framework is there, and within that framework, it's so possible to express spontaneity. Or you look at a work of art, like some forms of modern art. They look just like splotches of paint, right, on a canvas. But if I tried to just throw paint and then sell it off for $1 million, no one would buy it, right? Because there are certain principles that go into art, even though if it looks like it's something just spontaneous. Not looks like, even if it is something spontaneous. That's the point. An artist paints spontaneously. A musician plays spontaneously. And yet they all act within certain direction, within certain framework. And a framework allows spontaneity to be expressed. So that's the nature of the spiritual world. Yes, everyone is spontaneous. And yes, everyone is following orders. How is that possible? That's exactly the only way it's possible, is you can be spontaneous when you follow orders. Right. Yes. They can come from the inside, right? Orders can come from the inside. Often they're called inspiration like this, or guidance from the Supersoul, from within the heart. Right? But generally, the idea is what distinguishes an order from a desire, even if it's a pure desire, right? What orders distinguishes an order from a desire is that it comes from someone other than us. Right? So if it comes from the inside, that's okay. But we have to be absolutely sure it's not us where it's coming from. You see? So if we're 100% sure that what's on the inside, where it's coming from, is Krishna and not us, then it's okay. Then it's okay, right? But something cannot be an order if it comes from us. It has to be coming. In that sense, an order is external. It has to come from someone other than us. And this is the big problem with Mayavad philosophy. This is why there can be no devotional service with Mayavad philosophy. Because there's no possibility for order. Right? If you are the only one, and you are God or whatever, you are everything, then where's the order going to come from? Right? There's no dasa. Jivere swarupoi krishna nitya das. There's no agnya. Do this. It's not possible. Right? I am the spiritual master. Right? According to that philosophy. So there's no order. So order in some sense has to be external. I mean, it doesn't have to be physically external, but it has to be external to our identity. Yes, Prue? Yes. Yes. Good question. Where's the limit to building upon an order? Because we talked about how, you know, you receive an order, you can do just that, or you can build upon it. And the answer is there is, in spiritual life, there's no limit to how you can build upon that order. Right? And this is why the service of a devotee increases unlimitedly. Right? The service that even a devotee performs in Vrindavan, even if it's a simple service, goes on and on and on, better and better and better in different ways. There's always ways of improving something which is perfect. Right? even in the material world, there's no limit to the amount of service we can do. Of course, the body, it imposes some limits, right? And when it comes to a point where the body itself becomes a limitation, a constriction on our ability to do service, to build upon that order, this is called bhava, this is called ecstasy. The 8 changes that happen in the body, the ashtasattvika vikaras, is basically what's happening. That the physical mortal frame is just too limiting, it's too puny of an object to contain the unlimited ability of the spirit soul to perform service and to love the Lord. It can't be contained, and so the limbs become extended and the hair stands on end and you start crying and rolling on the ground and all that happens, right? Because this poor mortal frame cannot contain it. The Goswamis stop eating anything, they stop drinking, they stop sleeping. Their bodies were like, they'd have to check in every once in a while. Oh my God, it's been 3 days I haven't eaten. I should do that. Otherwise, what's going to happen to the body? Right? Is they have to keep a schedule. I haven't done it yet. Right? That's how service becomes unlimited. So a devotee in that sense, right, is actually very relieved, very happy to embrace death, to go back to Godhead. Oh, finally, these limitations are finished, right? They're gone. I can approach the Lord.
I received the Lord and it's been followed for many years. But then I found myself more. The environment was too much materialistic, so I had to make up that order. So now I can close to complete.
Yes. Yes. Order following is a dynamic process, right? In other words, when we receive an order, even in spiritual life, it's not that that's the end of the road or the end of the picture. In fact, it's quite the opposite. Right? We receive a set of orders when we receive first initiation. My Guru Maharaj, Hanumat Preshak Maharaj, he says this many times. Right? We receive first initiation and a set of orders. We receive second initiation, another set of orders. We receive third initiation, or sannyas, right? Another set of orders. And we think, I'm done, right? I got second initiation, I've got my set of orders, right? But beyond that, fifth initiation, sixth initiation, seventh, 256th initiation. When we go to the spiritual world, right? And our service is to boil milk for Krishna, and one of the senior gopis shows us how to adjust it nicely, so that, you know, I don't know, it doesn't fall over, it doesn't foam so much or whatever. Right? We've received our 356th initiation on how to do service. Right? So in other words, orders and our service in performing that order can be different depending, especially in the material world, right? Especially in the material, depending on our change in circumstances. What works, the order that's appropriate in one particular circumstance may not be in another. Srila Prabhupada, he was a grihastha. Right? And he did his service very nicely and made full attempt to take care of his family, etc. But at some point in his life, he received an order from his spiritual master, which was very difficult at first to follow. Right? Take sannyas. Come with me. Take sannyas. That order was not given at the age of 25 when he first met his spiritual master, or at 35 or 45. It was given at a certain point, you see? So, as we progress in our spiritual life, as our physical, as our psychological situation changes, then the order will also adjust. And if this so much depends on the person giving the order. Right? It's so important that that person is mature and has the ability to give order. Because they too will acknowledge the fact. Or we can go back to them and say, you know, I need an adjustment on the order. Or I feel like now it's time to move further with this order. Or they themselves will understand that there's a limitation here. Of course, sometimes order givers are not qualified. It can cause difficulty or problems. Right? But yes.
Still
Right. Right. Yes. 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 You know, it's a very, very nice point, because even if we receive an order that we absolutely don't feel good about, but if it's coming from a superior, it's coming from someone who deserves our respect, at the very least, we should go back to them and say, you know, I'm struggling in this way to follow the order. I don't think I can do it now. Please forgive me. In some way, we have to satisfy them, right? So that the blessings continue. And this is the point. It's not an option to just neglect it. We have to at least go back. And most people who are in that position of our superiors, right, will understand, right? They'll be satisfied, even if they're a little upset, they'll be satisfied. At least this person came back to me and said, express to me, I can't do it, please forgive me, right? Even that is a little satisfying. Okay, you know, whatever. They're immature, they'll discover one day, I'll show them, you know, whatever. But at least it's a little satisfying that, okay, this happened. So it's always so important to kind of hold that closely, because if we neglect the order, then we divest ourselves of blessings. And if we divest ourselves of blessings, then we're truly unprotected. Right? But even if we cannot execute the order, but we go back and express something, and we attempt to satisfy that person, then the blessings continue, even if we're not able to do the order. And this is why often even the spiritual master, seeing the inability of the disciple to perform the order, will change the order, right? Or not give the order, because I know that he's not going to do it anyway. And I don't want to put him in a situation where he has to neglect it. Right? So it's a nice point, you know, kind of going back and saying, I still need your blessings, even if I can't do it all the way. Right? That's the bare minimum we can do. And generally that satisfies a person who is our well-wisher. So our time is up. It's 5 to 9. Thank you so much for your attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.